being faithful and attentive in the divine will. From the writings of the servant of God Luisa Pia Carretta, the little daughter of the divine will. Day 29, the Queen of Heaven in the Kingdom of the Divine Will. Blessed child, you know that I was present at the resurrection of my son. But I did not say a word to anyone, waiting for Jesus himself to manifest himself as risen, gloriously and triumphantly. The first one to see him risen was the fortunate Magdalene. Then the pious women, all came to me telling me that they had seen Jesus risen, and that the sepulchre was empty. And I listened to all, and with an air of triumph I confirmed all in the faith in the resurrection. By evening, almost all of the apostles had seen him, and all felt as though triumphant at having been the apostles of Jesus. Being faithful and attentive. The divine attitude. It is good to begin at the heart of the matter. What does it really take to live in the divine will? To progress in it? And to come to possess it? Above all, it takes attentiveness. By far, there is no phrase that Jesus repeats more often throughout the Book of Heaven than, be attentive. Therefore, from the start, be aware that you must learn to always be attentive to the divine will no matter what you are doing, even if you're doing the most ordinary things. Volume 36, May the 17th, 1938. If the creature had to give us only what is spiritual, he could give us very little. But in giving us also his little natural acts, he can keep giving them to us always, and we are in a continuous relationship. The union between us and the creature is never broken. All the more so, for the smallest things are always at one's fingertips, within reach of the little and the great, the uneducated and the learned. Breathing, moving, attending to one's personal needs is proper of everyone, and these things never cease. If they are done to love me, to let the life of the divine will be formed in them. This is our triumph, our victory and the purpose for which we created them. So, be attentive. I watch your steps, your words, the movements of your pupils, your tiniest acts, in order for my will to have its life, its place. We don't care whether the act is natural or spiritual, big or small. But we watch attentively to see whether all is ours. Whether our will may arise its sun of light, sanctity and love. We use even the most insignificant act to make the most prodigious wonders, forming the most beautiful scenes to keep us all amused. For, and in Jesus. The divine attitude at therefore, whatever your daily duties, little by little you must learn to always do them for the love of Jesus and in Jesus. This is what it means to be attentive to the divine will. In this way, whether you are driving a car, cutting the grass, changing a diaper or typing on a keyboard, your actions will have a divine value. To do everything for Jesus means to do everything with the pure intention of pleasing Jesus alone. Jesus says. Volume 3. April the 25th, 1900. Purity indeed is so great that he who acts for the sole reason of pleasing me does nothing else but send forth light in all his works. He who does not act rightly, even in the good that he does not do anything but spread darkness. Volume 3. July the 9th, 1900. The soul which is truly mine must not live only for God but in God. You must try to live in me, for in me you will find the vessel of all virtues, and by walking in their midst, you will be nourished with their perfume so much so as to be full, as from a meal. Then you, yourself, will do nothing else but send light and heavenly perfume. Because to live in me is the true virtue, it has the power to give to the soul the same form of the divine person in whom she makes her residence, and to transform her into the very divine virtues in which she is nourished. Now to do everything in Jesus is to give up your own ways, and to do everything in the same manner and with the same attitude that Jesus would do it, thus allowing him the pleasure of doing the work in you. Jesus explains, in living for God tilde the soul can be subjected to troubles, bitterness, and to being fickle, to feeling the weight of the passions, to interfering in earthly things. But living in God? No. It is entirely different, because the main thing in being able to say that a person lived in another person should be that he had left his own thoughts and even took those of the other, as well as his style, his own tastes and even more. He had left his own will to take up the will of the other. Thus, in order that a soul may live in the divinity and dwell there, she must leave everything that is her own, that is, deprive herself of everything, leave her own passions. In a word, abandon everything, to find everything in God. Peace is a sign. It becomes clear, therefore, that to do continuous acts in the divine will you must be constantly attentive to maintaining the divine attitude of doing everything for the love of Jesus, and in Jesus. One important sign of this divine attitude is the peace you will experience when you are abandoned, accepting all that happens within or without as God's will, and, self-forgetful, concerned not with your own interests, but only those of Jesus. Without this abandonment and self-forgetfulness, you will become disturbed when things don't go the way you planned or desired, and this shows that your human will is acting. Being thus disturbed, you lose your peace, and you retreat from the divine will. Jesus explains. Volume 3. June 17, 1900. To act in God and not to leave the boundaries of peace is all the same. Therefore, if you observe a little disturbance, it is a sign that you are exiting a little from within God, because to act in Him and not to have perfect peace is impossible. Furthermore, the boundaries of peace are endless, rather, in everything that belongs to God. All is peace. Volume 8. July 17, 1907. The true sign for knowing if a soul lives in my will is in all that which happens, in anything, it happens in peace. This is because my will is so perfect and holy that it cannot produce even the shadow of disturbance. Hence, if in contradictions, mortifications, and bitternesses, one feels disturbed, he could say he is in the shadow of my will and not within it, he feels his own will is master rather than the divine. Volume 13. October 18, 1921. And once when Louisa had spent an entire day disturbed, late at night, after she had calmed down, Jesus appeared and said to her in sorrow, "My daughter, today, with your disquiet, you have prevented the sun of my person from rising within you. Your disquiet is a cloud between you and me, and it prevents the rays from descending into you. If the rays do not descend, how can you see the sun? If you knew what it means to prevent my sun from rising, and what a great evil it is for you and the entire world, you would be very careful to never again become upset. It is always night for those souls that are upset, the sun never rises. For tranquil souls, instead, it is always day, my sun wants to rise at any hour whatsoever, the soul is always ready to receive any hour whatsoever, the soul is always ready to receive the good of my coming." Volume 26. March 13, 1927. And then, disquiet is nothing else than a lack of abandonment in me. I want you to be so abandoned in my arms that you need not be concerned about anything. I will take care of you and protect you from everything. You cost me a lot, I have put much in you. I alone have rights over you. So, if the rights are my own, your care will be all my own. So be at peace and do not fear. Be convinced then, how important it is to always be disposed to the divine will by keeping attentive and at peace. For the divine will only unfolds its acts according to the dispositions that are shown it. The actual act. As a way of keeping attentive to the divine attitude throughout the day, Jesus has given us the actual act, but these actual acts must not become mere words, something external. For then, while saying the formula of the actual act, you would remain in the state of operating in your own will. No, the actual act is designed by God to help the soul enter into and maintain the interior disposition of the divine attitude. Louisa explains this in these words. Volume 12. March 23, 1921. To enter into the divine will, above all it is necessary for me to forget myself, my will, my interests, which for me no longer exist, and to preoccupy myself only with the interests of Jesus. That everything of mine disappear, and that in the will of Jesus, the love, the prayers, and the reparations of Jesus Himself become mine. Thus, everything that is His, becomes mine. His will, too, is mine. And since in the divine will there are all goods, past, present, and future, thus all these goods too become mine. To live in the divine will is to live on all that Jesus possesses. But the all does not consist of a formula. It was said to me that the soul must enter into the divine will at the cost of whatever sacrifice, when God asks it, and the greater the sacrifice is to enter into the divine will, the more perfect will become the transformation and the acquisition that she will make. Consequently, to practice entering into the divine will with repeated formulas and with repeated intentions in all acts, even minimal, insofar as one can, is acceptable to God, and is a setting out toward this divine transformation whereby the creature lives and operates in the divine will. Human weakness supplied for. Having seen then what the divine attitude truly consists of, it becomes apparent that it is not always easy to maintain. Louisa pointed this out. Volume 12. March the 28th, 1917. My love, many times it is difficult to always have this divine attitude. Jesus replied, My daughter, what the soul cannot always do with her immediate acts in me, she can supply with the attitude of her goodwill. Then I will be so pleased by her, that I will make myself a vigilant sentinel of her every thought, of her every word, of her every heartbeat, etc. Moreover, I will place them as retinue inside and outside of myself, looking at them with so much love as fruit of the goodwill of the creature. When, however, the soul, merging herself in me, makes her immediate acts with me, I then feel myself so greatly attracted to her that I do together with her that which she does. And I change her action into divine. I keep track of everything and reward everything. Even the smallest things, as well as a single good act of the will, do not remain unrewarded in the creature. Volume 36. September the 5th, 1938. So, even when, because of human weakness, you lose your attentiveness or become unable to maintain perfect peace, and thus lose the divine attitude, Jesus is still pleased with the attitude of your goodwill. And though your immediate acts then cease to be acts done in His will, the good news is that, if you have firmly committed yourself to live in His will and have not taken this commitment back, this human weakness does not cause you to lose the life of the divine will that Jesus has begun forming in you. As the following passages illustrate, I understood the holiness, the beauty, and the greatness of living in the divine will. Then I thought to myself, living in it seems a hard thing to do. How can the creature possibly reach that point? Human weakness, the often painful circumstances of life, unexpected encounters, the many problems that leave you at a loss, don't they all hold the creature back from living in this holy state that requires the greatest attention? And my sweet Jesus, resuming his words with an unspeakable tenderness as to make my heart burst, added, Me little daughter of my will, my concern and my continuous longing to have the creature live in my will are so great that, when the creature and I have agreed with firm decision that he must live in my fiat, that is my will, the first one to make the sacrifice is myself. To attain the goal of having him live in it, I place myself at his disposal. I give him all the graces, light, love and knowledge of my will, so that he will feel the need to live in it. When I want something and he quickly accepts to do what I want, I see to everything. And when he doesn't do it because of weakness or circumstances, not through lack of will or through negligence, I will make up for him and do what he was supposed to do. I turn over to him what I've done as though he had done it himself. My daughter, living in my will is life that I have to form, it is not virtue. And life needs motion and continual acts. If this were not so, there would no longer be life. At best, it could be a work, which does not need continual acts, but not life. Therefore, when because of unintentional indisposition or because of weakness the creature does not do what he should, I don't cut off the life. I continue it. And perhaps in that same indisposition there is also my will, which permits those weaknesses. Therefore the creature's will continues to mingle with mine. And then, along with everything, I look at the agreement we entered into, the firm decision we made as opposed to any contrary decision. In view of this, I continue my commitment to make up for what the creature lacks. In fact, I double the amount of graces. I surround the creature with new love and new stratagems of love, so he may become more attentive. I awaken in his heart the utter need to live in my will. This need is for his own good, for it may make him aware of his weakness. He will then rush into the arms of my will and beg me to hold him close so he may always live with it. Volume 36. October 26, 1938. My good daughter, take courage and don't be afraid. I won't leave you nor can I leave you. The chains of my will link me to you inseparably. And then, why are you afraid that you will leave my will? When you entered it, there was a firm and decisive act of wanting to live in it, so, too, in order for you to leave it, another firm and decisive act would be needed. When your attentiveness fails, considering how difficult it is to be continually attentive to maintaining the divine attitude and that it could take years to obtain this grace, which is the grace of continual prayer, these passages are a great comfort. How much Jesus loves you! How much he longs for you to live in his will. Yet, this comfort mustn't ever cause you to become lax. Remember, attentiveness is the key to living in the divine will, and when your attentiveness fails, Jesus says. Volume 36. October 26, 1938. Though you are in my will, it's as if you were in a place where you don't care to do what's right for you to do, what's appropriate for you to do in order to adorn my will. Direct it and lavish on it everything you can. Being thus troubled in my will, you're not concerned with receiving my creative and operative act. So neither can I give it to you nor can you receive it. You remain at a sort of standstill. And in another place he says, Vol. 1, Num. 4, March 16, 1922, be attentive, therefore, because when your actions don't flow in my will, it is as if the sun stood still in its path, and when you are distracted it is as if clouds covered the sun and darkness came over you. Nevertheless, when distractions are involuntary, one strong and decisive act of your will to return to my will is sufficient to put the sun back in motion and with a swift breeze send the clouds on their way, thereby making the sun of my will glow more magnificently. Attentiveness. The road to possession. Attentiveness is therefore the road that must be constantly traveled to come to the full possession of the gift of the divine will. Until then, this gift can be considered yours only at intervals and on loan, which you must ask for whenever you wish to use it, as Louisa illustrates with these examples. Volume 18. December 25, 1925. Suppose I was given some money of gold that had the virtue of multiplying to as much money as I wanted. Oh, how rich I could make myself with this gift. Instead, another receives the same gift on loan for an hour in order to execute an action and then has to return it quickly. What a difference there would be between the riches I possess by the gift and that of the one who received it on loan. Or, if I was given the gift of a light that never fades, thus, by night and by day I am in safety and always have the good that comes from possessing that light which no one can take away from me. It becomes a part of my nature, giving me the light of knowing good in order to do it, and the evil of fleeing from it. Thus, with the light, given to me as gift, I scoff at everyone, at the world, at the devil, at my passions and even at myself. Therefore, this light is for me a perennial fountain of happiness. It is without arms, yet it defends me. It is without voice, yet it teaches me. It is without hands and feet, yet it directs my way and makes itself a safe guide in order to bring me to heaven. On the other hand, someone else, when he feels the need, must go and ask for this light. Therefore, he does not have it at his disposition. Since he is not in the habit of looking at things together with the light, he does not possess the knowledge of what is good and what is evil, and then, does not have sufficient strength to do good and avoid evil. So, not possessing the light and continuous light, in how many deceptions, dangers and narrow ways does he not find himself? What a difference between one who possesses this light as his gift and one who must ask for it when he has need of it. In the end, by perseverance in attentiveness to the point of keeping the divine attitude continuously, you will come to finally possess the supreme gift of the divine will. Volume 18. December 25, 1925. Therefore, first I want to see that the soul truly wants to do my will and never her own, that she is ready to sacrifice anything to do mine, and that in all she does, she asks me always, even on loan, the gift of my volition. When I see that she does nothing without the loan of my volition, I give up to her as a gift because, by asking for it again and again, she has formed the empty space in her soul in which to put this celestial gift. Living habitually on the loan of this divine food, she has lost the taste for her own volition. Her palate is ennobled and is not adapted to the vile foods of her own ego. Therefore, seeing herself in possession of the gift that she longed for, yearned for and loved so much, she will live by the life of that gift. She will love it and will give up the esteem that it merits. Summary of the importance of attentiveness. The key to living in the divine will is attentiveness to it, even in the most ordinary things. Attentiveness means striving to constantly keep the divine attitude of doing everything for the love of Jesus and I am Jesus. Doing everything for the love of Jesus means doing everything with the pure intention of pleasing Him alone. Doing everything in Jesus means giving up your own ways and doing things in the same manner and with the same attitude Jesus would do them. One sign of this divine attitude is the peace you experience when you are abandoned to God's will and forgetful of self. To help you maintain the divine attitude, Jesus has given you the actual act. Even so, the divine attitude is difficult to constantly maintain. Fortunately, when you lose it through human weakness and not by deliberately choosing to do your own will, although your immediate acts cease to flow in the divine will, the life of the divine will that Jesus has begun forming in you continues. However, you must always strive to be as attentive as possible, because when you lose your attention you remain at a standstill, unable to receive the operative act of the divine will. Attentiveness is the road to possession. Until the gift of the divine will is fully possessed, it must be considered yours at intervals and on loan, and so it must always be asked for. By persevering in attentiveness to the point of constantly keeping the divine attitude, which is continual prayer, you will come to finally possess the divine will as your own. A final exhortation to be attentive. Volume 19. February 28, 1926. My child, do not lose time, because every time you occupy yourself with yourself, you lose one act in my will, and if you knew what it means to lose one single act in my will, you lose the divine act. That act embraces everything and everyone, and which contains all the goods which are in heaven and on earth. More so, since my will is a continuous act which never stops its course, nor can it wait for you, when you stop with your fears. It is more convenient for you to follow it in its continuous course, than for it to wait for you, when you place yourself on the way in order to follow it. And not only do you lose time, but having to appease you and to raise you from your fears in order to place you on the way of my will, you force me to deal with things that do not regard the supreme volition. Your very angel who is near you, remains on an empty stomach, because every act you do in it, as you follow its course, is one more unexpected beatitude which he enjoys being near you, and it is a redoubled paradise of joys which you offer him, in such a way that he feels happy of his destiny of having you in his custody. And since the joys of heaven communal, your angel avers the unexpected beatitude he has received from you, his redoubled paradise, to the whole celestial court, as the fruit of the divine will of his protected one. All make feast and magnify and praise the power, the sanctity, the immensity of my will. Therefore, be attentive. In my will one cannot lose time, there is much to do. It is to your advantage to follow the act of a God, which is never interrupted. Volume 19. February 28, 1926. I continued in my usual fears, and my always amiable Jesus, making himself be seen, all goodness, said to me, "My daughter, do not lose time, because every time you occupy yourself with yourself, it is an act that you lose in my will. And, if you only knew what it means to lose a single act in my will, you lose the divine act which embraces everything and everyone, and which contains all the goods that are in heaven and on earth, much more that my will is a continuous act, which never stops its course. Nor can it wait for you, when, with your fears you stop. You must follow it in its continuous course, rather than it waiting for you when you place yourself on the path to follow it. And not only do you lose time, but I, having to re-pacify you, must lift you up from your fears to place you on the path in my will. You constrain me to occupy myself with things which do not regard the supreme will, and your very angel, who is beside you, remains fasting because of this, since each act that you do in it, as it follows its course, is one more accidental beatitude which he enjoys by being at your side. It is a paradise redoubled with joys that you are over him in a manner that he feels happy about his lot of having you under his guardianship. And since the joys of heaven are in common, your angel avers the accidental beatitude that he has received from you. His paradise is redoubled to all the heavenly court as fruit of the divine will in the soul whom he protects. Everyone makes merry and magnify and praise the power, the sanctity, the immensity of my will. Therefore, be attentive. In my will one cannot lose time. There is much to do. It is proper that you follow the never interrupted act of a God. Thoughts on the dynamics of living the gift of the divine will. By the very fact of our created existence, we are totally dependent on God, who is more united to our soul than our soul is united to our body. We depend upon him for being created and conserved in existence. He provides the continuous prime movement for all of our activity. For it is God who works in you both to will and accomplish, according to his good will. Philippians 2.13. Thus the divine will is always acting in us and giving us natural grace to keep us living, acting, breathing, thinking, etc. At any time God could add supernatural grace upon this natural grace. He has even chosen to do so. He can and does give us actual grace to help us dispose ourselves to the reception of sanctifying grace, which is given normally through the sacramental system and the cross, in accordance with our disposition. Volume 14. May 19, 1922. In heaven the blessed enjoy all the blessedness that my will contains, and they live as if in its very center. But they cannot multiply my will, for in them their merits are fixed. Therefore, you are happier than they, because you can multiply my life, my will and all my beneficences in them. My will, rejoicing in you, is acting, and it needs your acts to multiply me. Therefore, when you act, I am anxious to see that you act in my will so that I can see myself multiplied in your act. How alert you should be, so as not to let anything escape you. God can also operate with us in our acts and flood our acts with his own divine essence, life, and qualities, such as light, beauty, wisdom, power and love. The kingdom of God comes without observation. Luke 17.20. All these divine qualities are integral with his own real life emanating eternally from his divine will. If God chooses to invade our acts in this way, then the acts of the soul are transformed and divinized in the real life of God. These acts are truly divine. And since the human will is the unfailing depository of all activity and experience of the creature, the soul itself is deified and participates immediately and abundantly in the divine nature, without losing its own nature, according to its capacity, which is potentially ever expanding to the farthest boundaries possible to creatures. Volume 15. April 2, 1923. Each new entry that you make into my will gives me the incentive to give you additional knowledge and to tell you about other wonders, because I want you to know the good that you do so that you value it and desire to possess it. When I see that you love and value it, I will give you possession of it. Knowledge is the eye of the soul. The soul without knowledge is blind concerning those goods and truths. In my will, There are no blind souls. Rather, each new acquisition of knowledge leads them to a broader perspective. Enter often, therefore, into my will. Broaden your horizons in my will and, as I see this, I will return to tell you more about my will. The two wills, human and divine, cooperate in the production of these acts. The human will concurs and flows in the divine will and allows it to operate freely in these acts. And the divine will forms its divine life in them. And since these acts are lives, filled with divine life, and not merely works, they multiply to the infinite, penetrate everywhere, embrace all eternity, and speak forever of love, adoration, praise, glory, and gratitude to the most blessed Trinity. The divine goodness is so pleased that it gives possession of the divine will to the creature to be its will in common with God. Then the creature can say that the divine will is our will and no longer only that of God alone, to the blessed Trinity's great delight. Volume 17. February 15, 1925. Daughter of my will, each act in my will is a new heaven that has extended over the head of the soul, each more beautiful than the other. The air of these heavens is divine and carries sanctity, love, life, strength, and contains all pleasures together. This is why one feels a balsamic and sweet air. My will in heaven is fortifying, beatifying, delighting, penetrating everywhere, transforming and divinizing everything in itself. By contrast, it is operating in the soul who possesses these new heavens of my will on earth. And while it is operating, it delights itself in extending new heavens. Therefore, my will labors and works more in the wayfaring soul than in the celestial Jerusalem. There the works of the saints are finished. There is nothing more for them to do. But here my will always has something to do in the soul in which it reigns. Therefore, it wants everything for itself. Nor does it want to leave any act to the human will, because it wants to do much. And with each act that it leaves to the human will, one more heaven would be left unfolded and there would be one fewer of its works. Ah, you do not know what happens in the soul when it gives full liberty for my will to operate in it and when it works in my will. But for God to operate in this way in the creature's soul, a certain disposition is required on the part of the creature. Among other disposing graces received through Mary, the divine mandatory, the necessary grace is to have an awareness of what the divine will is doing constantly and everywhere in creation, to recognize, love, esteem, and appreciate what it is doing in both the material and spiritual orders of things. Then, with union of intentions produced from this awareness, we invite the divine will to operate freely in our souls, and we unite with it to do everything together. God does with us what we do, and we give him the paternal joy of doing with him what he does. Volume 17. March 1, 1925. My daughter, courage, do not fear. There is no darkness in you because only sin is darkness, while good is light. Do you not see that I have gone out from the depths of light of your interior? But do you know what is this light? It is all your interior operation that you do. Each additional act that you do is another filament from your will that ties to the current of the eternal light. And for as many acts as you do in this way, adding other filaments, the light becomes more complete, stronger, more brilliant. Thus the light you see is what you have done, and the void you see in this same light is what remains for you to do. And I will always be in the midst of this light, not only to enjoy it but to bind the filament of your human will with the current of the eternal light, because I am the beginning and the essence of the current of light. Same reading continued. The light bulbs receive only in proportion to their individual capacity. There is need, therefore, of a celestial current to transmit the light and a human current capable of receiving it. And as you go about doing more acts in my will, you will add other filaments to make the light I want to enclose in you more complete. Intention, the soul of our actions. God does not look at the external action of the creature but at the intention, which forms the life of the action. The intention is like the soul of the external action, which serves as a veil to the intention. In a similar way is the soul's relation to the body. It is not the body that thinks, speaks, palpitates, works, and walks, but it is the soul that gives these actions their life, their motion. Thus the body is the veil of the soul. It covers the soul and acts as its carrier, but the vital part, the action, is of the soul. Volume 19. September 7, 1924. Every act which does not proceed from its volition is a rent, a theft that is made of its light. And, therefore, in seeing itself robbed, its light converted into darkness, it agonizes more than a mother when the one carried in her womb is seen snatched away, not to be given life but to be killed. Thus, the losses that my will endures when the creature is not united to its center and does not live with the volition of its light, are divine losses of infinite value. Her evils, her ugliness that she acquires is incalculable and indescribable. My will remains without creatures in it. And it remains stripped, without heredity, without right to any kind of good. Therefore, anything else more important or greater does not exist than my will. It will place equilibrium, order, harmony, likeness between creator and creature. Therefore, I want to make known what the divine will and the human are, so that we restore peace there, and it acquire its kingdom, and creatures see the lost goods restituted to them. Such is the intention, true life of our actions. If we call the divine will as life of our minds, the beating of our hearts, the action of our hands, and so on, we will form the life of the intelligence of the divine will in our minds, the life of its action in our hands, and its divine step in our feet. If we do this in all that we do, our acts will serve as veils to the divine life that is formed in the interior of our acts through our intentions. Prodigies of Our Lady. September 8, 1932. Then my beloved Jesus asked, "Have you seen what it means to live in the divine will? It means acquiring the virtue of transforming all human acts into as many sons speaking incessantly of love to God. All that flows from my divine will possesses a virtue that at the same time operates, enlightens, and continues throughout the centuries. Therefore, they are the acts that will triumph upon him, and will win him over. But what is this intention? It is our wills appealing to the divine will. This empties our wills of themselves, forming the space in our acts to give place to the action of the divine will. By thus making a veil of our wills, they hide within their actions, even the most ordinary and natural actions, the extraordinary action of God. On the outside are seen common actions, but if the veils of our human wills are removed, found within is the operative virtue of the divine action. This is what forms the sanctity of the creature, not the diversity of actions or noisy works, rather the ordinary common life, with the necessary actions from which we cannot exempt ourselves. These are the veils that can hide the divine will and provide the place where God abases himself to become the hidden actor of his own divine action. So, as our bodies hide our souls, our wills veil God, hide him and form by means of our ordinary actions the chain of the extraordinary actions of God in our souls. Therefore, we must be attentive and call the divine will in everything we do. If we do this, the divine will never deny us its act to form the fullness of its sanctity, for however much it is possible to a creature. Keep these articles, study and apply them for the glory of God and your sanctification. Volume 35. August 23, 1937. You must know that the more the creature seeks my will, wanting to know it, loving it, and not letting it escape in each of her acts, the more my will grows to its fullness. One more little attention is enough to make it grow, a sigh, a desire for its life. Oh, how wonderfully it grows, pushing it so high, up to the heights of the divine sphere, to know the highest and most intimate secrets. My will is life, and as life it does not want to stop. It wants to grow continuously, and to grow it awaits the most tiny act, a loving invitation from the creature. Even more so, since it doesn't want to grow by force, but it wants the creature also to desire the continuous growth and fullness of my will. As its fullness grows, so does the divine strength within the soul, the sanctity, the beauty, the happiness, the knowledge, and the fullness of the innumerable goods which my divine fiat possesses. See then, how much it means one additional act, a sigh, a desire for it, a call, it is acquiring more of a divine strength. It is being embellished, so much so, that we ourselves remain enraptured. So we look and look at her again and again, and we recognize in her our strength and our beauty, and oh, how much we love her. We feel even more happy because she is for us the bearer of our joys and of our goods. Before this creature our love swells up, it overflows from ourselves and pours into her so much that it fills her up, forming around and inside of her our maze of fidgeting love, the ardent desire to make grow the fullness of our will. Same reading continued, my daughter, there is a great difference between those who are all attentive, all eyes and all heart for my will, and the ones who just want it, but without any special attention. It seems that these don't have eyes to see it, heart to love it, and voice to call it in all things. Volume 35, October 12, 1937. Do you think it's trivial to give our being so that a creature, too small to be able to contain it, can give it back to us, together with herself, and we, in turn, can give ourselves again? It is a continuous reciprocal giving, which makes so much love and glory arise that we feel as if we are repaid by her for having given her life. So, each thing she does without allowing our will to enter, is a RIP that we feel. A right which we feel being taken away from us. A joy that we lose. Therefore, be attentive, so that all may become divine will for you. Volume 36. May the 6th, 1938. Then he added, in a more tender tone, dearest daughter, if you knew the extent of my love for the soul who lives in my will, you would love me so much that your heart would burst from joy, and your love and my love would consume you, devour you for pure love of me. Now, you must know that my divine will gathers all that the creature living in it does. Nothing done in my fire can leave, but remains in our fields of light, and my will delights in picking up motion, breathing, steps, words and thoughts, all that she has done in our volition, to incorporate it in our own life. If I didn't do so, our life would miss that breath, motion, everything the creature did in our will. They are really parts of our life, so we feel the need for them to continue their breathing, moving and walking inside ours. Therefore, we call the creature to live in our will, breath, heartbeat, motion and love. We are neither able nor do we want to detach ourselves from even the breath of one who lives in our will. It would be as if our life were torn away. As she moves, breathes and so forth, my will puts on a festive air and keeps gathering all that the creature does, loving her, as if it would contribute to form breath and motion in the creature, and, at the same time, as if the creature would give breath and motion to God. Volume 36. May the 17th, 1938. So, be attentive. I watch your steps, your words, the movements of your pupils, your tiniest acts, in order for my will to have its life, its place. We don't care whether the act is natural or spiritual, big or small. But we watch attentively to see whether all is ours. Whether our will made arise its sun of light, sanctity and love. We use even the most insignificant act to make the most prodigious wonders, forming the most beautiful scenes to keep us all amused. Volume 36. May the 27th, 1938. Now, you must know that all the harmony of the creature is in the repetition of her good acts done in my will. A single act does not form any harmony or beauty, but many continuous acts united together call the attention of God, who puts himself in waiting for the acts of the creature. As she performs them, he communicates to her, now beauty, now sanctity, now goodness, wisdom or love. In sum, he provides her with his ornaments and divine qualities. All the acts repeated by the creature form the strength of her soul, binding God even more to herself. They form heaven in the depth of the soul, and as she goes on repeating her acts, some are turned into star, others into wind-blowing whispers of love, others become a sea continuously murmuring love, glory, adoration to God the Creator. In some, the whole atmosphere is reproduced in her. However, when the acts are not continuously repeated, they lack that unifying power that gives strength to all. They lack that divine mode of acting unceasingly, sustaining each of them with creative strength in perennial attitude of doing and redoing again. Furthermore, a single act has never formed any sanctity because it has no strength. It does not possess the life of love, since true love never says, basta, never stops, and if it does, it's dead. Only continuously repeated acts can send good surprises to heaven where, as one arriving at his being enjoyed, another one follows and more arrive, forming the enchantment for the heavenly fatherland. Therefore, in my will there is always something to do and time can't be wasted. Volume 36. November 13, 1938. Then, I was thinking to myself, how can one know whether he is living in the divine will? My sweet Jesus added, my daughter, it's easy to know it. You must know that, when my fire reigns in the soul, it keeps its act in continuous operation. It cannot be present and not do something. It is life, and it must breathe, move, palpitate, make itself heard. It must have its primary operating act so the creature feels its empire, and follows its acts, almost continuously, in the divine will. Therefore, continuation is a sure sign that one lives in it. With this continuation, he feels the need of divine breathing, motion and attitude. Therefore, if he stops his continuous acts, he feels as though he is missing life, motion and everything else. Soon he restarts his continuous acts, because he knows that it would cost too much to do otherwise. It would cost him divine life, and one who has possessed it can hardly let it go. Now, what is this action of the creature in the divine will? It is the sequence of my life and of my will in the creature, because only my will has the virtue of being unceasing in its continuous acts. Otherwise, if it could be said so, everyone and everything would remain as if paralyzed and with no life. But this cannot be. Now the creature does not possess by herself this virtue of operating continuously, but when united with my will, she has the virtue, the strength, the will and the love to do it. Volume 36. November 20, 1938. I feel the divine will inside and outside of me, surprising me whenever I'm about to do my little actions, or to say my little I love you, to invest them with its light and make them its own. It has such an astonishing inimitable attention that it's almost incredible. If the creature is not attentive in giving it her little acts, oh! How much it suffers! Oh! How much I too would like to be all attentive, to imitate it by letting nothing escape me, so that we can surprise each other. But as I was thinking this, my sweet Jesus, visiting my little soul, all love told me, my blessed daughter, the soul that wants to live in my will lives in waiting for it. She waits for it when she loves, because she wants to love together with it. If she operates, she awaits my will, because it wants to be actor and audience. My will is in continuous and anxious expectation of everything the creature does, in order to inhabit her, to be the actor, to make her acts its own. Volume 36. December 8, 1938. My flight in the divine will continues. It seems to me that it can be found in all things, natural and spiritual, saying with unspeakable love, I am here, let's act together, do not do it by yourself. Without me you wouldn't know how to do it the way I would. I would remain with the pain of having been put aside, while you would remain with the sorrow of not having in your acts the value of one single act of a divine will.